A sterling Reading FC performance ruined by a sloppy equaliser, ruining the Royals' chances of getting back to winning ways. Not today. Reading bagged a 3-1 victory over Bristol City with a healthy dose of cosmic justice on Saturday afternoon. Welcome to Tyler Sten Podcast, episode 242, with your host, Mark Mayer. I'm joined this week by two of the finest minds in Reading FC punditry. And the first of those is the Tyler Sten website editor, Simeon Pickup. How's it going, mate?
Absolutely buzzing after that win. Bit unused to having wins in such an emphatic fashion, but great to be on the podcast to discuss it.
And the view from the Dolan, potentially, well, actually not soon, as we will get onto a bit later on, but Ben Thomas joins us as well. How's it going, mate?
How you doing, gents? You all right? I'm feeling matey fine today. So, yeah, absolutely great result yesterday. And hopefully we can get another one in midweek.
Yeah, the games come thick and fast, and they're all on TV, which I quite like when we're winning, I must say. It was awful when we were losing, but when we win, Sky can have as many games as they want, as far as I'm concerned. So let's we'll talk about the Sheffield Wednesday game a bit later on. Just before we go into the recap with the Millwall game and Bristol game to look back to, big shout out to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, as ever. Putting their support behind us is always something that we massively appreciate. And speaking of which, the Patreon subscribers as well, who continue to put their hands in their pockets for the Tyler Sten and the Tyler Sten podcast, always massively appreciate that. And if you want the details of how to join in with those select fine few people, the details are on the website and the page for this podcast article. So we lost pretty much every game we've had to discuss for the last 2-3 weeks. This time we don't. Let's go into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Quick word on Millwall, just to for chronological sake. 1-1 draw this one was at the Den. Reading falling behind to a Jed Wallace free kick in first half stoppage time. Some arguments about whether it was a free kick, but no arguments about the quality of the free kick. Raphael certainly not dropping a clanger in that situation. And in the second half, Lucas Shaw popping up with the Michael Elise assisted equaliser. And Sim, that equaliser really hammered home. I remember speaking about it with Westy on last week's podcast, that Elise has to start, particularly in that central attacking midfield role. He's the most creative sort of X-factor player on form at the moment that Reading have, and that exactly showed why.
Yeah, without John Swift in the squad, fit and available, he's the only one with that kind of, that guile on the ball, that eye for a pass. And when you watch that Millwall assist back, it's remarkable just how quickly he does it. It's one of those where the ball comes from really quickly and he immediately plays it around the corner for Zhao. That requires a lot of confidence, a lot of intelligence and great vision as well. And considering he's just about 18, I think he turns 19 in a couple of weeks maybe, for him to have that level of match awareness and intelligence to spot the run and the technique to get it, it's marvellous, and assists like that are worth their weight in gold.
One other change that we had for both of the games this week was the complete opposite end of the creativity spectrum was Tom Holmes coming in at right back for Thomas Estevez. And with Millwall, as again we discussed last week, you kind of imagine the horses for courses aspect for that. But with Bristol City as well, different sort of game. Tom Holmes kept his place in the team, still played really well, I think, Ben. And as we get into let's analyse the Bristol City game, and Tom Holmes, particularly in that first half for Reading, was one of the players that was integral in quite a cagey affair, but I think really useful for Reading to get through that first half without conceding any real chances.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the, just going back to Millwall performance quickly, it was a great mental performance, and I think really that the main positive was that they didn't lose the game, considering the kind of dreadful form they'd been in. I think with the Bristol game, the shape first half and the way they were kind of when they didn't have the ball was absolutely phenomenal, and I know that was picked up in commentary from the, you know, from the pundits, but I'm a huge Tom Holmes fan. You know, I really think he's going to be a fantastic player for us. I think he, you know, he's athletic, he's quick. Yeah, he's not a natural right back. We know that. We've talked about that a lot. But, you know, the fact that he's slotted in so well to that right back role has been incredible, really. And that has been a really, you know, this season been a really sticky area for us. But, you know, for me, it was a toss-up between him and Mate yesterday for man of the match. I think there's some crazy statistic about, you know, not conceding or hardly conceding goals when he's on the pitch. I know he's not just responsible for that, but his performance yesterday was outstanding. And obviously, you know, we'll talk about a bit more detail in a minute, but that chance that Morrison had that he, you know, basically won the header from, that could have been our second goal, purely from kind of Hines' athleticism to get that ball across the face of the goal. So very, very pleased with yesterday, very pleased with the individual performances. But, you know, the way that they kind of, we blew the team away, that, you know, the Bristol team that were on a good run really was incredible. And I think we're going to see a lot more from Holmes moving forward, you know, as the team grows in confidence.
Yeah, very much a final quick word I want to put on Tom Holmes is very much a modern footballer, in the sense that if you imagine if he came through in the 90s or any time before that, a big centre-half, his sort of stature, he would not be very good on the football, is basically what I'm saying. But he's absolutely, yeah, as a right-back, you have to be decent enough to pass the ball around everything. He does that, and it is something that Reading's academy has been intent on drilling into their players for years, and perhaps only now we are seeing the sort of fruits of that labour. Players like Jake Cooper came through in years before, perhaps weren't quite as good on the ball as they needed to be, and yet you look at Tom McIntyre, Tom Holmes, both of those players are very decent on the ball. And speaking of which, as we go into the second half of the Bristol City game, the deadlock is broken with a piece of fortune that Reading have deserved, I would like to think, given what's gone on in recent weeks. And Ovie Ajari's shot deflected into the back of the net. I must admit, Sim, it kind of confused me as the ball hit the net. And then as it rolled across the line and seeing it, the TV camera immediately flashed to Ajari, who wasn't celebrating. I did have a split second of thinking, has this actually gone in? But it did. And as the lack of celebration aside, I'm trying to think of whether he ever celebrates, but it was so useful to get that first goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said fortune just a minute ago there. And for me, it's a case of Reading making their own luck. Yes, it's one of those where it's a little bit lucky that the ball ricochets nicely past the goalkeeper. But Reading have pushed forwards, Reading have had a go on goal. And you think about the number of times Ajari's got into a position like that and he's maybe not pulled the trigger, or he's run into a blind alley and lost the ball. But to credit to him, he's worked space really well and he's had a go and he's been rewarded for it. And it also shows that the danger for Lucas Schell, even when he's not shooting himself, when he gets the ball and he drives at a defence and he commits defenders, it opens up space for people like Ajari to have a go, and really shows just how much all-round danger Reading have in the final third that they're able to create chances like that.
One of the things that I've been noticing during our stint on Sky Sports, which I suppose you have to say now probably isn't going to come to an end for the next couple of weeks at least, or next few weeks, but one thing they've been talking about is the fact that Reading's shot conversion rate at the start of the season was obviously so impressive and unsustainable, I think is how Don Goodman has continually described it, which I'd agree with. But even though we scored three goals this weekend, there were still a number of missed chances. If we convert all our chances, we probably win this game by 6-0. There was, as Ben said, Michael Morrison at 1-0 with Tom Holmes knocking back and he can't finish it. Yaku Mate has a 1-1. I think that was when the game was 1-1. Tom Holmes had a really good header. I think that was, again, 1-1 or 1-0. Well saved. Yaku Mate missed a open goal when the score was 2-1, which I still can't understand, Ben. And that shows to us that there was even more to come from Reading on those days when they do hit every single shot to the back of the net.
Yeah, there was the deflected shot. I think it was from Richard as well that hit the crossbar, wasn't it? Mate had that chance in the first half, the kind of swivel turn that Bentley did well to kind of knock away. So, yeah, I mean, what was it, 21 shots on goal, 10 of those on target? I mean, it didn't, at half time, you didn't think it was going to open up as much as it did. But, yeah, the forward players just went for it. And I think what was most pleasing for me were the kind of the work off the ball to get in those positions. You know, obviously, we talked about Jao with the Ajari goal, the first goal, but you know, the second and third goals, the quality of work put in by the players just behind those positions was absolutely fantastic. you know, the Elise assist, which has got huge plaudits, and rightly so, because it was a phenomenal ball through to Mate. Fantastic finish there as well. And then obviously Mate returning the favour to Jao, who again kind of turned in a very tight spot to knock it in for 3-1. So, yeah, you cannot fault the forward players in the way that they're moving at the moment. And there's a hunger there, really, to kind of stay in the team and do well and score goals. And, you know, I said last time I was on, the most pleasing thing is that the goals are being shared around. Yeah, you know, Jao's got, what, 9-10 this year already in the league. You got other players around him that are kind of supplementing that, and we've not had that previously. So it really is positive from my point of view that other people are kind of chipping in with the goals. And we could have had two defenders on the score sheet yesterday as well, which is, you know, unheard of for our club. So, yeah, at the moment, it all looks good. It's whether or not they can keep that consistency and that level of performance and kind of keep taking teams apart as they did yesterday is the key.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And when it comes to the Bristol City game, we did have that moment of here we go again, where Naki Wells, who scores pretty much every time he plays against Reading, popped up with the equaliser. It was only one of two shots, though, that Bristol had on target, at least. I think there's two shots overall, actually. And one, I was speaking to a couple of Bristol City supporting mates afterwards, and they basically said that is their problem. Their attack does not produce anything like as many chances on goal as it needs to. And Reading, at that point, particularly in recent weeks, think of the Preston game, the Coventry game when they fell 2-1 behind, they didn't bounce back well from those moments. And yet it was a matter of minutes when they did produce the second winning goal, as it were, the 2-1 goal. And Sim, how important was that for Reading to be able to having, you know, they haven't won for weeks going into this game, and yet they get pulled back late on and still manage to pull it out?
Yeah, it's absolutely vital. And when you get back to 1-1, you're starting to think, oh, here we go again. Are we gonna lose this? And thoughts start going around your head about how we're going to lose it. Chris Martin coming off for Bristol City, off the bench, and Naki Wells as well. And you're thinking, it's going to be the same old story again. But when you've got someone like Elise in there with that sheer arrogance in the middle to come off with an assist like that for Mate, you're always going to give yourself a chance. And it's massive testament to him, and obviously for Mate as well, for making a really good run in behind that you need him to make when you've got creative players, but you need someone making the run in behind. And when they've got the confidence to try things like that, massive, massive credit to them for coming up with it, given the last couple of weeks that they've had in terms of form.
And January's only ever just around the corner with these things. As Michael Elise say, you get a couple of drip feeds every now and again. Last couple of months, you've had the odd report of X team or Y team looking at Michael Elise. Say these sort of assists, these sort of moments, just kind of bolster Reading's case, because they will ask for serious money if anyone ever comes in for Michael Elise. And if, you know, if Reading do well this season, someone will come in for him. And Reading, I think, have got a good case to ask for a hefty fee, which a team probably wouldn't pay at this moment. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And Ben, that through ball for the 2-1 goal, really nice finish from Mate. But Elise, he's perhaps the one thing that we haven't been able to do is get his best position for Reading in the last couple, you know, last season or so. Is it slightly wide? Can we actually drop him deep enough to play central midfield? Or is it just in that number 10 role, which is probably the most important role in the team? And to see him play so well in that position for the last sort of 1.5 games, it's massive for the team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's benefiting really from Swift not being in the team. I think, you know, Swift's lengthy injury has kind of allowed him to, you know, mentally prepare himself for the fact he's going to get a run in the team. I know that obviously Paolo's been playing Semedo, who, I, to be honest with you, I think he's got a bit of a hard rap off Reading fans recently, because he, you know, we know Semedo's not a number 10, but people seem to think he is. And, you know, if we're looking for a natural number 10, then it has to be Elise, hands down. I think, just going back to your comment about if he goes in January, yeah, it would be a shame, because you want as many good players as you can in those positions. But realistically, you know, Swift comes back in and it's almost kind of problem solved if he does leave. I think really, though, for Elise, he has done well in that position, and he is starting to kind of get the fruits of his labour, because he, you know, you watch him in games and he does try quite a lot of stuff and it doesn't always come off for him. But the positive and what I'm seeing with his performances is that his head doesn't go down. You know, he keeps persevering, and that was kind of, you know, evident in a Millwall game with the assist for Joe, and then obviously yesterday where he was outstanding in that middle number 10 role. So there are a lot of positives to his game. I just feel like he's still got an awful lot to learn, and that sounds obvious because he's 18, but very, very sloppy in possession at times, you know, sometimes kind of quite crucially for us. And he does tend to put pressure back onto the kind of the partnership of Loren and Renamota, where they kind of get overwhelmed in midfield. So he does need to step that part of his game up. But yeah, from attacking returns, you can't fault him. And I think that, you know, the more he's able to do that in the team, the more he will kind of develop in confidence. And, you know, we may well get a large offer come January for his services.
Yeah, and the thing is with Swift, we'll talk about him in the mailbag, actually, because there is a question on him. But yeah, it's about having options. And if Elise is going to be good for the first hour of the game, you're 2-0 up and then you take him off, then that's certainly a system that works. And Alpha Semedo being exactly that sort of substitute at 81 minutes with the score 2-1, he was the man who came on for Elise, which is a perfectly reasonable game plan to deploy, in my opinion. The other final word on the Bristol City game really is the third goal. Mate producing a really, really good run, really late on. He's always been the sort of player who will battle until the very end, even if you don't really need it, I suppose. Lucas Shaw with a really good finish. Bristol City, I have to say, with the stats about them only having a couple of shots, didn't really threaten at the other end. So Reading were able to come away with the points, and they now sit fifth in the Championship table, level on points with Watford and Swansea, who are just above them on goal difference, and 2 points behind Norwich. Norwich and Bournemouth also dropping points on the weekend. And we'll be going into the mailbag now, but first we'll be hearing from Veljko Pavlović.
Really seeing our guys playing this way, recovering the spirit, recovering the good game, and definitely getting back on a winning track after a month without winning feels great, but especially when you see the spirit we had today and the performance. So we're looking forward to keep humble, stay humble. We learned in this tough stretch that we had how tough it is to recover and to get back on solid performances like today. And we also, what we learned, I think, in the last month and the games that we didn't win, today I think we applied very well.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So not quite for the mailbag, but I will have to start the mailbag off with Cole Murphy, long-term friend of the website, saying that it was a pleasing narrative arc for the Reading game. Rising dread as chances were missed, a wave of anger when Bristol scored an offside equaliser, sharpening frustration as the arguable red cards were avoided, but then finally a cathartic wave of cosmic justice when Lucas Shaw scored our third. I thought I'd have to read that in full, given that as I told Coleman on Twitter, that I'm just going to steal that basically as the title of the podcast, because it's a very good description of the game. In terms of the mailbag then, obviously always welcome to get your questions in the Twitter and the Facebook and the Gmail, thetilehurstend@gmail.com. SDS doing that this week said, who is the best left back in the league and why is it Omar Richards? Stuart adding, if you were Omar Richards' agent, would you be advising him to sign a new deal or hold out for a Premier League move in the summer? Now, this is the thing, isn't it? As we talk about with Elise, as soon as you start doing well, other teams are going to be interested. Omar Richards' contract runs out at the end of the season. Sim, what do you think Reading are going to do?
I think at the moment they're probably trying to... I think I saw a couple of weeks ago that Reading are looking to kind of put together a financial deal for Richards and put it to him shortly. Hopefully we can keep him, and to be honest, I'd splash out to try and keep him, because he's come on so well in the last couple of months of this season. Looks so much more mature, so much more confident on the ball, and there aren't really any games when you can fault him. I don't think he's necessarily always as attacking as maybe you'd like him to be, but defensively he's solid, he doesn't really make mistakes, and it seems like he's really kind of emerged from those couple of years when he was one of three battling with Blackett and Abita, and he's really responded well to just being Reading's basically one and only left back, and really stepped up to the plate in that scenario. From Richard's point of view, it could very well be that he doesn't need to get a move to end up in the Premier League next summer. So at this moment, if I were him, I probably wouldn't agree to a deal, to be quite honest with you, because it's so open with Reading's future in the next couple of months. And maybe he needs to just kind of wait until the summer and wait to see how things pan out.
And that's the thing, isn't it? When I think it is very true, actually. One of the things that footballers say in interviews and whatnot is when it comes to their contracts, they'll let their agents deal with it and they will focus on their football. And that is, 90% of the time, that's that. And I think that's probably what Omar Richards will be saying to himself right now, and will be saying to the club, is that this isn't maybe the forefront of his mind. He's enjoying a really good run in the team. He's played every single minute of the Championship season. He's 22, he's played 77 games for Reading now. That's a really decent tally for a player who I've always rated, but a lot of people haven't always agreed that he's going to be a full-on Championship, potentially Premier League level player for the rest of his career. So he's doing absolutely fine now, Ben. And the thing is, I can't imagine Reading cashing in January unless some silly money comes in. So we're just going to have to wait, whether we can convince him or we get to the end of the year and see which league we're in. And it might have to be a sort of last minute deal here.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously he would have to be an absolute car crash to not get picked at the moment, because it is just him in that position naturally. So, you either find players just kind of coasting through the games and just doing the basics and not really push themselves, or doing what he's doing and just going all out. I completely agree with Sim, and the fact that if I was him, I wouldn't sign a deal. He knows he's got guaranteed football for pretty much this season. I think from the club's point of view, in terms of financial package, if there was a left back as good as him around, could we afford him? Probably not. So, you really have to go all out to try and tie him down. But I think he will just kind of play the game and let it drift out and see what happens. I think if we were kind of lower down the table and look like we were going to struggle this year, then there's no way I'd sign it. But, keep your options open. I was trying to think earlier of kind of left backs in the league that are kind of in his league at the moment. Two I could come up with really were Firmino at Watford and maybe Bennett at Cardiff. But even, the latter was a stretch there. I think he does need to do more attacking wise, but from a defensive point of view and again, an athletic point of view, a bit like Holmes on the other side, he's just been absolutely fantastic, and he really has had a breakthrough season. And left back has been, for the last couple of years, a real kind of up in the air position for us. But it's his now, not just by default, but also for the performances that he's putting in. So fair play to him. He's got a big future in the game. And I think he just needs to kind of play his cards close to his chest and kind of see what happens as we move through the season, really.
Yeah, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on it on the tar list. And then it's absolutely something that we all want him to sign a new contract, but there are so many factors at play. And let's face it, Reading's financial situation between going up and staying in a pandemic-affected Championship next season, they're different galaxies, really. They cannot be compared, how different those situations are going to be for the club. And Alistair actually tweeting us saying, if we're in the playoffs come January, do you think the owners will go for it and splash the cash? Now, this is the thing, isn't it? When it comes to FFP, these problems go away remarkably quickly if you get promoted. Ask QPR, ask Wolves, Leicester, I think, when they went up. I think pretty much all those three teams broke FFP, but they went up, so it didn't matter. And this is the thing for Reading, Sim. Is there the temptation to go out and, you can look at this team, maybe you think, oh, we could get a centre-back, or we could get an attacking midfield, or spend a get a couple of loan players on big wages who are established Championship talents? Is there, I think certainly amongst the fans, there's the desire to do that. But do you think there's going to be the chance that the owners will see that as a realistic thing to do?
It's a good question, really. I can't really... It's one of those where you really need to know what the financial situation at the club is like, even if there may well be enough money to do it. And I know Reading were kind of linked with a couple of late loan moves for a winger at the end of the transfer window last time out. But to be honest, either way, I wouldn't be looking at it in terms of ambition, basically. I'd be looking at it in terms of, can we get the right players in to improve this squad? And considering just how harmonious it is, and we've talked before about how small it is because of the clear out in the summer, I think we've used maybe the joint fewest number of players in the league. But it's a very harmonious group. The balance is great. The morale is great. And yes, you could spend a lot of money, whether you have it or not, on, say, a quality winger to give us another option in the final third. But if that player comes in and upsets the balance, it's not just a gamble that doesn't pay off. It's possibly a gamble that actively undermines the good thing you've already got going with the rest of the team. So yes, there is the element of, do you want to gamble or do you not want to gamble? But it's a really difficult balancing act for Paulo to pull off, and for the board to pull off as well.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It depends what Paunovic feels he needs. If he says, you know, every time he talks to the owner or whoever it is, probably not Nigel Howe these days, the new CEO, who's obviously very close to the owner, every time he talks to those guys, is he saying, God, I need a right winger. God, I need a centre mid. If he knows one position or two positions he wants, and he says, if you spend £5 million on a player, I will get you promotion, I think they probably do it. And Ben, is there that temptation, you know, we think about Jason Roberts' figure, him coming into the team in 2011-12, which rocketed the team towards promotion. Is there the temptation to say, you know what, whatever happens, happens, but this owner is generally pretty good at underwriting most of the debts that the club has. And if Paulo says, I want someone, go and get him, do you think they'll go and get him?
That's funny, because when I saw that question out, I literally just wrote down Jason Roberts, because you're absolutely right. I think, I mean, I still credit Jason Roberts with basically getting us promoted, because it wasn't necessarily his performances, but it's just his aura and the stature of getting a player like that in at that point, and it just lifted everyone, you know, the fans, obviously McDermott at the time, and the players around him. I think with this season, you've got to really balance it. You know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is getting promoted more important than the kind of consequences of staying in the league next year, and then saying, well, you know, what are the consequences of our kind of financial penalties? Because I think there will be some next year, most definitely. I think they probably would throw money at it, to be honest. I think that, you know, they were quite clear when they kind of were looking at getting Paunovic in and the kind of players that he wanted to bring in and buy Najaria, even when the money potentially wasn't there. I think they would spend money. And I think if we're still in and around the playoffs, you know, they'll be trying to push us to kind of the top two. So my personal opinion is that they will throw money at it. What that looks like in terms of players coming in, though, not sure. I would be hard pushed to bring anyone else into this group, as Sim said now, because of the kind of the nature of the closeness of it and how they're performing and the kind of the impression that they give to us on social media of how close they are. Again, I'm not really sure what positions we could strengthen. Yeah, we have got, you know, players that are maybe a weaker bench in terms of players we need to bring on, but would those players come in and be happy to be bit part players and just supplement the squad? Probably not. So it's very, very difficult. And I'm quite glad I'm not doing the recruiting for this, because it's going to be a tough challenge to balance all of those factors together and still make us successful.
Well, this is the thing. John House has tweeted us saying, how does John Swift fit back in, given that he's back relatively soon? Add Andy Yeardon, and yesterday is our strongest lineup in his view. And I think this is kind of the only thing that Reading really need to work on at the moment. For example, Jaden Oden, a new, and I think he's a midfielder who signed for the club in the last couple of weeks or last few weeks. He's been at Brighton and places like that. I think he was a free agent, came to Reading. He was on the bench, actually, for the last couple of games. Reading can have five subs. Championship teams are allowed to use five subs at the moment. So it's that bench aspect. And if you're, you know, recently signed 19-year-old is on your bench as your midfielder, that's not a good situation to be in for a promotion-chasing team. However, John Swift comes back, Andy Yeardon comes back. I think that's where things fit in, because Swift, you know, if Elise plays amazing, then Swift doesn't get in the team. But if he doesn't, then you change it over and you don't have to worry so much about that being a problem. And Sim, I wonder if you think that the return of Swift is going to upset the balance, or maybe just kind of give us a bit more solidity in terms of 20 minutes to go in games. Then we're playing Saturday, Tuesday again. Those rotation options, whether it's more of an advantage in that sense.
I don't think it'll upset things too much, considering that he's already established in the squad, and if it weren't for his injury, he may well be in the first team starting week in, week out, despite how well Elise has done this season. The problem we're going to have over the next couple of weeks and months is consistency and breaking teams down. We're not always going to be as free-flowing as we were against Bristol City. We are going to need to come up with some different ideas, basically. And what Swift gives you, that basically no one else in the squad gives you, even Elise, is that ability to control the game in terms of possession, in terms of range of passing from a deeper position. Elise, I like higher up the pitch. You get him in those areas where he can make those assists that he did in the last week. Great, but if you can get someone deeper in midfield, maybe in that two in place of Rinomota or Laurent, I know it's harsh to drop either of those, but in some games you're going to want a more attacking option there, someone who can kind of dictate play a little bit and spread the ball around. Swift can do that, and if he can add that over the next couple of weeks and months, then this side's going to continue to improve, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the thing, it's options in different games and different scenarios. Reading, you can picture it now with the run in the last 5-6 games of the season. If you're playing the team that's low down the table, there are going to be times when it looks like all hope is lost and Reading need a last-minute goal, and that's when you need to pull out some aces from the pack, and John Swift coming back is certainly one of those players, I would say. Last couple of questions then. From the mailbag, Dean Bennett saying, when was the last time Reading had 21 shots in a game? Certainly not this season, I believe. I just kind of had a flick through for the games that I think would have been relevant, but not for a long while. And Kev O'Brien saying, is this front line better than the 106 front line discuss? All joking aside, taking that seriously for a second, Glenn Little, Bobby Convey, Kevin Doyle, Dave Kitson, Leroy Lita, you know, got Steve Sidwell bursting from midfield, Stephen Hunt off the bench versus Meite Ajari, Ajao Elise. Ben, where would you say that one of those selections tops the other?
What a question that is. I think in terms of the 106 team, it's difficult because they're revered, aren't they? And that's kind of always our marker, isn't it? In terms of this is how we want our teams to play exactly like that and to do as much as they can. You know, and we joke always about the 107 and all that sort of stuff in terms of trying to break it. I think what's lacking at the moment and is not quite there with the current, the current forward players is that they are not consistent enough on a regular basis. So with that 106 team, one of the many things that made it so successful was that if you think about the strikers, Doyle, Lita, Kitson, and obviously Long supplementing them as well, you were just desperate as a striker in that team to not get injured because you know whoever was coming in was going to score a goal. And that, you know, the service that Convey, who is one of my favourite all-time Reading players, and Glenn Little as well, and as you said, you know, Sidwell and Harper with that energy in midfield, they're just goals in that team. And I think it's very easy to kind of laud, and quite rightly so, the kind of the front players after performance like yesterday. But as Sim said earlier, there are games that we have struggled in this season where they've been kind of almost non-existent, really, from an attacking sense. So, yeah, I mean, they're not comparable at the moment, but certainly if they keep going and keep pushing the way they're going and there's more consistency with the goals that they're contributing, then yeah, of course, that, you know, we can start to talk about them in the same breath. But at the moment, for me personally, no way.
I think on the form that he's on now, if Lucas Schau can extend that for the rest of the season, then he's the sort of player that I can envisage who would have been good in that 106 side. He's actually, you know, it's kind of similar to Dave Kitson in his holding up of the ball and how, you know, he just seems so effortless at brushing off defenders. But that's kind of where I'd leave it for now. Elise's got a lot to do. Meite is a very good footballer, but he's perhaps a couple of things in his game that you wouldn't say are too brilliant. And then after that, Ajari has not been on great form for a long time now. Sim, I don't know if there's anyone you would say of this current lineup that kind of threatens that 106 team?
I'd say Elise has the potential to get in there, but not at the minute. As Ben said, it's about consistency, and that 106 side was just so consistent. And another thing is that the game's changed a lot since then, basically. I think it's a lot more kind of intricate. I mean, we're talking about a front four that's more of a 4-2-3-1 rather than a 4-4-2, and this front four feels very different, but it's got a really good balance to it as well. It's very intricate and very tricky with, say, Elise and Ajaria. It's got the strength and the hold-up ability of Zhao, as you said, and then also Mate making the run in behind. And when you do get that combination, particularly, say, for the Mate goal at the weekend, it does show that we have all these different kind of elements all coming together into a nice kind of free-flowing unit, and hopefully we can see more of that, but maybe we're not going to see it week in, week out.
Well, I tell you what, when this team equals the 106 record on the 46th game of the season with a last minute penalty, I will dedicate an entire show to comparing the two of them. We can give Kev's question full justice, but for now we have to contend with the pokey residue of being fifth in the league. And we'll be moving on to the news bites now. With the final question, Sam Michael said, how should the club decide the 2,000 fans who are allowed into the Forest game? And why should it be whoever can bang out the best rendition of the Reading FC anthem? Let's go on into the news bites then and talk about the other good news of the week.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Yes, fans are back. 2,000 fans are welcomed into the Medeski Stadium from next Saturday with the Nottingham Forest game. We have Forest, Birmingham, Norwich and Luton all at home in December, all of which, as things stand, we believe are going to have those 2,000 fans in. The chances of Reading being moved into Tier 3 and losing the chances to bring fans in, I would have to say, looking at the cases kind of flatlining slash going down of coronavirus in the area, you know, it means that it's quite low, the chances that there's going to be a Tier 3 lockdown for Reading anytime soon. So that does mean that bear with me because this is the detail part of the podcast, those with over 4,100 royalty points who renewed their season ticket and paid their deposit before the October 2nd deadline have from Tuesday the 1st of December at 10 a.m. to buy a ticket for the Forest game. Now, that's basically it. Because I can't imagine that it will get to the second round of points the day after, and then from then on, you know, just general season ticket holders, etc., can buy. I think for the Forest game, that's probably going to be it. And then for the Birmingham game after that, you cannot buy a ticket for both. If you've gone to Forest, you can't go to Birmingham. Norwich and Luton, which come later in the month, have not been confirmed. Again, depending on how many people have tickets or season tickets, we don't know how many people have renewed. That might be the situation again where people can't just buy again and again. You might see a situation which all of those four games have to be attended by 2,000 different people, and then they kind of restart the process. Season tickets, by the way, you can still buy one if you think that's going to help you up. You're £60 for adults for a 2021 season ticket. That then means you get a half price ticket when you are allowed to go to a game. So an adult will pay like $13.95, I think it is, to get into the East Stand. But as I say, that's kind of, for a while, it's unlikely that you're going to get, if you buy a season ticket now, to get high enough up in the queue until they, you know, start letting 10,000 or whatever amount of fans back into stadiums. So detail part of the podcast over. Now we can have the argument. Sim, it's the way they've done it. What do you think on the fairness of the system?
It's probably about as fair as they could get it, to be quite honest with you, because when you've got only 2,000 that can come in, it's always going to be difficult, and there's always going to be disagreement over how to do it. And to be fair to the club, their hands are pretty much tied with it. And when you've only got 2,000 that can go in, you do have to be very selective. And I know people disagree about the royalty point system. I myself think it's getting a little bit outdated at the minute, but considering they've got not very much time to work on all of this and to come up with a vaguely fair system for 2,000 fans, it's probably the best they could have done, to be quite honest with you. In a broader sense, I'm a bit annoyed that it's only 2,000. obviously goes to a kind of a broader political question, but the thing about the Medeski is you could get far more than 2,000 people in safely with social distancing. Obviously, you still need to be careful. You still need to be cautious as much as possible. But considering how spacious and how modern the Medeski Stadium is, we could get a lot more than 2,000 in. And hopefully we're gonna get to that position sooner rather than later. At the minute, it's just frustrating.
Yeah, well, the tier system is effectively in place until February, pretty much no matter whether we like it or not. So I think 2,000 fans, it might be increased later on in like early next year. But for now, that's certainly how it's going to be. And me and Tim have talked over the week, actually, about how, compare Reading to Luton's ground, for example, you definitely could fit more fans in comfortably. But for political reasons, I can totally understand why it is a blanket 2,000 fans for everyone. And for the situation, I think for when it comes to how they're going to divvy out these tickets, time will tell as to how easy fans find it to go. It doesn't appear to be a ballot system. It appears to be just kind of phone up on the day and they'll put you through. So the club are confident that that's going to be okay. And the women's team tickets, they are just a general sale. So, you know, that's going to be interesting as to whether that overloads the phone systems when they go on or not. So, Ben, how confident are you rating your chances of being allowed back in the next couple of weeks?
I think, you know, fair play to Reading fans. We've been socially distancing since it was, you know, supposed to happen, really. So I think the way that the fans kind of tend to spread themselves out, particularly in the Dolan, you know, no one kind of sits beyond row Z there anyway. So,
to be honest, interrupt you, I'm kind of annoyed when I turn up in the northeast corner and I don't have the row in front of me to lay my feet out. So,
yeah, well, a lot of those games have been pick your own row, haven't they, really? So it is tough. I think from a personal point of view, I would qualify straight away for the Forest game. So my kind of, I'm putting all my eggs in one basket to try and get a ticket for that. I think what is really positive, though, is that I would then not be allowed technically to go to Birmingham, potentially Norwich as well. And I think that's a good thing because actually the sharing the tickets out. I agree that, and I'm saying this as someone who's got a lot of royalty points, I agree that the royalty point system is probably a little bit outdated now. I think there's probably something else they could do, but now is not really the time for that. I think the biggest thing is just to try and get as many different people through the door as they can over the period of time. It is very, very difficult. And I think, you know, they did well to kind of get as many as I think they've got in terms of people paying sort of 60 quid for essentially what was a retainer on the season tickets at the start of the season. I just think people just want to go now. Do you know what I mean? I think people are just desperate to get back there, and I'm desperate to get back there, whether that's in the or not, I don't really care. I just want to go and watch live football and kind of feel part of it, because, you know, this team has been exciting in quite large spells to watch, and to be able to see them in the flesh would just be fantastic, really. I think all things considered, and the time frame that they've been given to work with, it definitely seems the fairest way to me. How that continues to move forward, I don't know. You know, I just hope that as many people can get to the games over the next couple of weeks as they can do, and we go from there.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It is about sharing it out, I think, at this point in time. Personally, I mean, speaking as someone, I'm not a season ticket holder. I had to give that up when I went to university. And when I came out of university, I got a job that involved working a lot of weekends. My job is fortunate in the sense that I did actually get to go to the Reading Spurs friendly during the summer. So I've, you know, had my taste of certainly more than my average taste of live football in the last few months from that one game. But that means that I am someone who has a lot of royalty points but doesn't have a season ticket. So I would say that they do have a role to play, because I've been to countless games up until that point, which, you know, have stacked up to a point now. But I do think, however, that the royalty point system, it could well go if Reading get promoted. And I wonder, Sim, what you think would replace it? Because obviously for the last few years, it hasn't mattered, because there's only been like two games a season actually sell out in terms of away games. Home games never do. If we get promoted, there are going to be away games that sell out. And if we do remove the royalty point system, how do we approach that? Do we start saying, okay, well, you're a season ticket holder and that's it? Or, you know, how do we work that out?
I wouldn't want to remove it completely, because you do need to be rewarding fans for their dedication over the years. I just tweak it basically. And I'd like to see some kind of system where points essentially expire after a number of years, because at the minute you've got younger fans who are going week in, week out, who are, obviously not at the minute, but in the last couple of years, some years when Reading haven't been particularly good, but they've still been going week in, week out. They've been really loyal and really investing a lot of money. But basically, because they're younger and because they haven't been going for as long as other people, they've not been able to kind of really build up that number of points, but that same number of points that people who've been going for, people who were going a while ago, were able to build up. And I'd like to see some kind of system where essentially you weight it towards the amount of games you go in the last couple of years. Essentially, there's no perfect way of doing it, but if there's some way of kind of recognizing more recent dedication rather than what you've just historically built up, I think there's a better way of doing it. Also, games that are essentially show more dedication for going to. I mean, I think at the minute you get the same number of points for, say, getting a home ticket as for going on a long trek to Hull or Middlesbrough or somewhere like that. And I'd like to see more, basically more reward for, say, going to Barnsley on a Tuesday night, for example, just to really kind of reward fans for their dedication and the effort and time they put in.
Yeah, it's a nice idea, isn't it? And I think, I mean, from a personal level, that means my two trips to Newcastle to see us lose 3-0 both times probably mean that I've got about 7,000 points and 10 free home tickets. So maybe that's how it will work out in that sense. But really, I mean, as I'm a fan of the way that they've conducted it. Obviously, this is pending everything going okay with the phone systems and everyone trying to get their tickets. I know Arsenal's crashed when they tried to do that, but we're not Arsenal, luckily. So that hopefully won't happen for Reading. And Ben, it's just a case of, with a lot of fans, it's going to have to be a case of patience, really. And the first game, Nottingham Forest, is not the only game. We're going to have to remember as fans that hopefully everyone who's kind of in that top tier of season ticket holders and renewing and everything will get their shot over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think that's the positive, isn't it? It's like I said earlier, I was trying to work out in my head over the week about how they would do it, and just gave up in the end, really, because it was giving me a headache. But you know, the fact that they can, you know, they've basically said if you go to the Forest game, there's no way you're going to get a ticket for Birmingham. I'm just always intrigued about, you know, the figures they give in terms of season ticket renewals and season ticket holders, because you know we have been dreadful over the last couple of years, and it has taken an awful lot to kind of leave the house and go and watch them, whether that's home or away. So, you know, for me personally, I don't go away anywhere near as much as I used to for a number of reasons, really, mainly because I'm not allowed. But, you know, the home games are kind of a key for me. And I think Sim's right in terms of maybe having an expiry date on the royalty points, because there have been a lot of people that have given up their time for just nonsense, really, in terms of team performances. So it is very, very difficult, and it is always going to spark a discussion among fans, and people say it's not fair, and I've only missed, you know, one home game in 50 years or whatever. But the reality is that we are where we are, and only 2,000 people can go, and, you know, 2,000 is better than 1,000. So, you know, the more people that can get through the door and support the team, for me, is key. And, you know, I think they've kind of conducted themselves in the right way and distributed them in the right way as well. So I think the discussion about royalty points, you know, see when we're in the Premiership next year, how we're going to give out season tickets and tickets for the games. But for now, I think it's definitely fit for purpose, and just kind of wait to see what happens with you know, the wider circumstance as we move through the winter.
Yeah, one thing I would add before I go on with the rest of the news bites is, if I'm really like to have those who do get into the Forest game for the first game back, if they could get in touch with the show. I'm considering maybe an article or a bit of the podcast dedicated to people who have been sending in clips and photos and everything. So if you do get a ticket, if you could be in touch with the Tireless End at thetirelessend@gmail.com or the Twitter or your usual channels, we'd certainly like to hear from you. And, you know, as I say, the photos and the and any sort of video footage that you can get of yourselves enjoying the game and walking back into the stadium would be fantastic. I think we'd all enjoy watching that. So there's a, as I say earlier on, the women's team, there is just general sale for the women's team tickets. Bristol at home on the 6th, Man United at home on the 13th. They're at the Mad Stad as well. So if you're, you know, if you're in and around the area, if you're wanting to go to football games, there is nothing better than going to a football game between a Reading team and a Man United team, for example. So try and get on that if you can. The under-23s won 3-2 at Middlesbrough last time out. They play Burnley away on December the 14th. And the under-18s, they lost 3-2 at Brighton. They're next playing Norwich at home on December the 5th. Then they've got Villa at home in the FA Youth Cup on Friday the 11th. That game is not available for fans to go to, but it is live on YouTube, the club have said. So Friday the 11th for the next round of the FA Youth Cup, the under-18s. And lastly, of a pretty big news bites this week, was the news that for when things return to normal, effectively, the news that Blue Collar Food will not be involved in the catering of the the outside area of the Medeski Stadium, the kind of fan zone, as it were. These guys were Reading fans who came in and you know, put on a good service for a lot of fans to have something to eat and drink before they went into the game. It's a shame to see them go. And Ben, I wanted your thoughts on what sort of thing you're hoping to replace it and how it is that the Blue Collar have gone from the setup.
I mean, for me, I honestly thought the club were going to proceed this news with like, Ron Gourlay's back type thing, because it seems like such a Gourlay decision to make, you know, when he was in charge at the club making all those decisions. I can't understand it. I really don't get it. From a selfish point of view, part of the idea of writing the column that I did was to talk about the kind of match day experience. And there's absolutely no Reading fan that can deny that Blue Collar and everyone that kind of contributed to that improved the match day experience and the food quality and everything else. I talked a lot in the early days when I was writing about Anonymous Coffee, and you know, I know the guy Phil there, you know, reasonably well, and we'd have good chats and stuff. I don't understand it. It's absolutely bonkers, really. It really is crazy. And for a club that, you know, goes on about community links and enhancing that community spirit, and to do this, I just think it's bizarre. I think they'll change their decision. I think it's kind of our Gunnosaurus moment, really. I think they will rethink it because of the backlash, but also it doesn't make sense to just give the kind of the inside caterers the outside bit as well, because it's just not comparable. Whether or not that will be, you know, when they've got full capacity crowds back, I don't know. I really don't know. But it does just seem like a crazy, crazy decision. And it really baffled me in the week. It really did.
Well, Blue Collar on Twitter effectively suggesting that I think the club have decided to go for a company to do the whole thing. And Blue Collar, obviously a different company, taking it all into one company's hands. From a devil's advocate point of view, maybe easier for the club, it may be cheaper for the club. But as Ben says, there is a chance that fans can show their support for Blue Collar if they want them back and to bring them back into the fold and have that, you know, local aspect. And as I say, fans were involved in setting up in the first place. And there is a petition, which Handbags, one of the guys involved in this podcast, has set up on his Twitter. So if you want to go and sign that, then as I say, on his Twitter is the place to go and find that. And Sim, in term looking forward, in terms of what we hope, you know, if it has to be replaced or whatever, we just hope that there is something that is good for fans to go to, because at the end of the day, the Medeski Stadium's biggest problem, everyone always says, is there ain't nothing to do around the Medeski Stadium. And Royal Albert Park ain't gonna happen anytime soon. So we need stuff, and we need, if it's gonna be fan led and community led, then more, you know, even better.
I just want things that feel unique and special to Reading Football Club, basically. That was the thing about blue collar food. It felt like our thing. It felt like something that really brought the Medeci Stadium to life. Obviously, only in a relatively limited way with serving food, but it just added something special and added something very, very Reading about it. And I know they put up plans about Copple's Corner on Twitter as well, and their plans to have a fan zone basically outside the Medeci Stadium going forward, something Reading themed and something very kind of very special basically. And to turn all of that down, whether it's in terms of not having Copple's Corner or getting rid of blue collar food, it's incredibly frustrating, to be honest, because what we've seen in the last couple of years, perhaps not this year quite so much, is rising apathy at the club, falling attendances, fans generally speaking turning away, not really wanting to go as often and not really feeling as connected to the club. And Ben mentioned Ron Gourlay earlier, and it's the perfect comparison because it feels like a soulless decision, basically. The kind of decision that is taken without real consideration of what fans really, really value on a match day. It's not just about going to the stadium and watching the game. It's about the whole vibe of a match day, the whole atmosphere of being in and around the stadium. And if you can make that as special as you can and as unique to Reading Football Club as you can, not just a kind of bland corporate same as every other ground kind of thing, then it gets fans excited, it gets fans through the door on match day, and it's just so good for the club. And it's not something you can just kind of measure on a balance sheet in the same way as other things, but it really does add so much to the club when you have unique special things like blue collar food. And hopefully we'll see other things come in and replace it. And I think they've got a good idea with the mural they're going to have on the West Stand for next year. But a decision like this is just bonkers, basically.
Well, we'll certainly keep you up to date with the developments on that. And ultimately, I mean, this is something that perhaps the reason this news is as prevalent as it is because this is the week when fans are returning. And obviously those fans who are returning for the next few weeks and months will not be able to linger outside and have food and have a chat and everything. But we are getting there in theory. We're being told that we're getting there anyway. So hopefully, hopefully there is a way forward and a route out of this that satisfies everyone. But we shall see. And in the more immediate future, Reading have a couple of games this week. So we'll be talking about those in a second in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So, Sheffield Wednesday on a Wednesday, December the 2nd, 7:45 p.m. on Sky Sports Main Event and Sky Sports Football. And it's live for Reading FC against the Owls. And it's Tony Pulis time. We've had a bit of a nostalgia tour at times this season with Neil Warnock coming back. And Tony Pulis now, it's the old gang getting back together in terms of guaranteed championship promotion winners. And yeah, Sheffield Wednesday obviously had a points deduction start of the season, but they are really not doing very well, it has to be said. They've won 1 in 9. That was against Bournemouth, however. They've scored 2 goals in 8 games, and yet they've only conceded 3 goals in their last 6. Ben, this perhaps isn't the sort of game you can get excited about.
No, I mean, they've been a shambles really this year, and obviously without the points deduction, I still kind of looked at them in the season and thought they're going to struggle because there's no goals in that team. I think they've scored 7 in total this season. They don't really have anyone up front that's going to be able to do it for them. I think, you know, getting rid of Monk is what it is really, but to bring Pulis in just stay in the league. If you get mid-table, great, but I think they're going to be incredibly difficult to break down. I think they're going to be quite tight and compact, but it's going to be an ugly game of football, really, unless we can really turn it on like we did yesterday. It's one of those games that if you want to be up the top there at the end of the season, you've got to get something out of, ideally a win. We said before we came on air that our record in midweek has been pretty good. But I still think we have enough to win. I just don't think it's going to be very very nice to look at. They've also got some good players. They've got Barry Bannon, Luongo in the middle, I quite like. But apart from that, without being too derogatory, there's really nothing to get excited about with Sheffield Wednesday at all. And I imagine that they will really struggle this season with or without sort of Tony Pulis at the helm.
Yeah, funnily enough, as Sheffield Wednesday changed their manager, this is the seventh season in a row that Reading have gone to Hillsborough with a new manager. So Paunovic's first trip to Hillsborough. No, if he gets to Hillsborough again next season, lots of reasons why that might not happen. But if he does, he'll be the first manager in a number of years to get there two years in a row. And Reading, actually, Sim, this is one of the stats that surprised me when I was looking, planning for this podcast, is that Reading are unbeaten in their last 9 away midweek games in the league. There are 7 draws in that 9, but there's 0 defeats, and that's a hell of a stat.
Yeah, and it's really good, and it's a lot better to the seemingly to the last couple of years before that. And it's the kind of game where you do need to just pick up points, basically. We talked earlier about the consistency that we may not have this season, and it's going to be games like this when you can put in a below par performance, just not be at your best, and either you lose it 1-0 on a disappointing night up in midweek up in Sheffield, or you can have the grit and the resilience, just grind out a 1-0 win. And it might not be pretty, it might be kind of one of those games where it's decided by a set piece goal or a moment of magic, but we do need to be on top of our game, basically, and see what we can get.
Yeah, as I say, looking back over the Sheffield Wednesday fixtures this season, the teams they've lost to, Rotherham, Wickham, Luton, perhaps aren't the teams that you'd say are up to much, but the teams they've taken points off, you've got Swansea, Stoke on the weekend, 0-0 draw, as I say, they beat Bournemouth, are actually relatively decent. So when it comes to predicting this game, it's not too easy. For the prediction league last week, then let's update you on that. I personally was the only one to say that we beat Bristol City, which is quite nice. So that was a point for myself there. I also said 1-1 against Millwall in the week, as did Westy. So Handbags is top on 10 points. I also have 10 points now. Westy's on 8. Ollie got the Millwall draw, so he's on 5 points. Sim, you're back on 4, so you can have first dibs on the Sheffield Wednesday game.
Just on the Bristol City prediction quickly, I had 2-2, I think, and as soon as it went back to kind of 2-1 and 1-1, I was feeling kind of negatively optimistic that I was going to call a disappointing result there.
it's such a nice consolation prize, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a weird feeling when you think, oh God, Reading about to blow a game, but I'm going to get maximum points in the prediction league. I think for this one, it's tough to call. I mean, again, it's what Reading team shows up, basically. But considering we've looked better in the last couple of games, we've looked a lot more resilient, not conceded from open play in the last two, I can see us nicking a 1-0 win. It might be a bit scrappy and a bit untidy, but I think we'll get a 1-0 win there.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go for the 1-1 draw, as it was against Millwall. When you play teams that keep drawing, it's not the worst thing in the world to go to these places and continue their run of keep drawing. And for us, that'll be a nice little undefeated run of 3 games that we'll have put together as well. Ben, what are you going to say for predicting this one?
I think the game's going to be largely, as Sim said, what Reading team turns up. It's going to be more about what we do rather than what they do, really. So I think we'll win. I'm going to go 2-0 to us, but I think those goals will come sort of later on in the second half. I think it's going to be very difficult to break them down in the first, and I think we'll just have that little bit of extra quality that's able to push us through the game.
Well, I'll certainly take both of those results. And isn't it funny that the optimism has returned to the Tyler's Den predictions after a very brief but a sharp hiatus. And it's worth noting as well, as we go to Sheffield Wednesday, who are 23rd in the league in midweek. We then have Nottingham Forest, who are 21st in the league on Saturday. That's at 12:30. That's, for now, the end, I think, of the run of Sky Sports games that Reading have live on TV. So the Saturday lunchtime kickoff against Forest on Saturday after the Wednesday evening kickoff away to Sheffield Wednesday. And that draws to a close. Quite a lengthy, but certainly a really interesting discussion on the fan situation as well as the game analysis. Hopefully a nice podcast for you all to listen to. Simeon, thank you very much for popping on this evening.
Thanks for having me.
And Ben, as always, a pleasure.
Thanks very much, guys. Have a good week.
And as I said at the top of the show, there is the Cosmic Justice returning to Reading now. Fans are coming back. We're back in winning ways. And maybe this week we can extend that winning run for another couple of games. We'll be back after the Forest game. Thank you very much for listening, as ever. And come on your arse.
You smile. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it